Welcome to the Ayurveda and Psychology podcast. I am Charlotte Skogsberg, your host for this podcast. I am enchanted to meet and to take you with me on this journey into the human psyche viewed from the holistic approach of yoga and Ayurveda and viewed from the modern man approach of clinical psychology and psychoanalysis. So have something nice to drink next to you, maybe a cup of tea, have a seat, or go out for a nice walk in nature, maybe. Enjoy. In this episode that focuses on Ayurveda, I want to continue our new theme, our series on trauma, by speaking more specifically on the condition that has been called ADHD. But before we begin the episode, don't forget to sign up if you are interested in knowing more about a balanced life and Ayurveda for the free webinar that will take place on the 3rd of December. Simply email me webinar or DM me on social, like Instagram, for instance. The same thing, webinar with your email address. Enjoy the episode. Short for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And I want to introduce the episode with an anecdote from a session with a patient. This patient was sure they had some kind of problem, like a proper biological problem with memory, that there must be something wrong with them because they were incapable of memorizing details from articles they've read, for instance. And especially they notice it in moments where they had to bring those details back, when they were feeling cornered, to prove that they had the information stored in their heads. And I kept claiming that it was not the case, that they had not something wrong with them, but that instead the person in question was not feeling safe at the moment, in that moment, and therefore nothing was working properly. There were several reasons that I was so certain of that, but one of them was because I tested their capacity to remember in a situation when they were not aware of it. So because my patient felt perfectly at ease with me and did not feel, let's say, the need to prove something to me while reviewing the content of a book, they were perfectly capable of talking about this book for a good 20 minutes during the session. And I would even stop and ask for more details, ask them to come back on things and ask for names and other things, and they would remember. However, this person was brought up in a context during conditions where they had to be very vigilant, hypervigilant even, to specifically one of their parents' quickly changing temper. And in order to please the parent, they had learned that knowing things academically was important. The parent was most probably highly disappointed with itself, actually, for not having succeeded professionally. And it was really especially around academic matters, right? So homework, of course, or just information, knowledge that is linked to university studies more than anything else. And the parent was educated, quite educated in the academic world, but not successful professionally. So we could also imagine, potentially, that there was a drive in the parent of wanting to push its child to achieve in this specific sphere, right? So that created like an extra tension. This thing of finding yourself all of a sudden with a blank is also what we have often known as stage fright. But we don't relate to the term of stage fright when it happens on a daily basis because we're in a situation where we know that we know something, we have an opinion on something, and we probably have more information to give, but we feel scared actually, because we're being cornered or we're being pushed or someone else is just seeming dominant to us. And so we basically lose our capacity of remembering things. It's a little bit the someone says something to you, you get angry, you answer something, and you feel in the moment that you answer it that you could have come up with something better. And then it's like later on that day or the next day where you go, oh, I should have said that, right? It's a little bit this. There's not something wrong with our brains. It is the context that we are in. It is the situation that brings this up. And this is what I want to talk about today. Because this widely spread condition, or called a disease, that I don't actually would agree really with calling it a disease, but a disruption in development for a person of ADHD, is maybe more a question of what is going on around you at that moment. And of course, then, therefore, not only at that moment, but bringing you up and how you deal with it later on. So this theme that I've been on now for a couple of weeks, and that we could call trauma, right? Or ADHD under the umbrella of trauma, maybe going more into that, has therefore a lot to do with those capacities in moments of distress. So it has a lot to do with how we perceive ourselves. It has a lot to do with self-esteem. And I started to talk about turbulence a couple of weeks ago and how hard it is to pick oneself up when in the darkness of the pit. I then moved on to the fact that we are very drawn to the idea of putting labels on our conditions, in quotes, so that we make sense of them, so that we don't feel so different. Yes, of course, it has the opposite effect, though, because it has the effect of putting us into boxes and therefore ostracizing ourselves. We're drawn to it because our mind wants to make sense of things and will therefore seek patterns. But then it's also wired for what we call this negativity bias, which means that we will seek what could go wrong, or we tend to let a negative comment, for instance, stick with us like Velcro, but a positive one, we can just easily forget. It's like water on a duck's back. And this means, of course, that when we have a label on ourselves that says what is wrong with us, when we feel this is our definition, right? We stuck with it. It defines us. And we will therefore, of course, narrow ourselves down to that label very much. We will actually absolutely diminish ourselves. I want to take the opportunity to mention my online program for you. It's a program dedicated to healing all kinds of typical illnesses that we find in modern days, from chronic fatigue, anxiety, digestive issues, weight gain, weight loss, insomnia, and everything in between. Now, I've put this together in a way that we assure success through 3 individual consultations with me, 8 group sessions with a whole group, and educational material for you to digest whenever you can and want to. We work on healing whatever you want to heal, take care of whatever needs seem to be unmet in your organism, or even without trying to heal something specific, finding the perfect routine that works for you. If you are seeking to find more balance in your life, if you keep yo-yoing in how you're feeling physically, mentally, or emotionally, and never being able to really see how that stabilizes, then this program is for you. Get in touch with me either through my website yogisha.com or send me directly an email, charlotte@yogisha.com, and we'll jump on a call to talk about it more. Thank you for listening. Back to the episode. Modern medical science, psychiatry especially, and I guess psychotherapeutic work in general, singles us out by making our suffering very individual. So originally, clinical means case by case, and it was, of course, a really good way to learn how to treat people case by case. Not to generalize symptoms that we know is not necessarily a very good thing. But what it means as well, and especially now in the strange society we live in, is that it puts the responsibility of the sick society on the individual itself. And when you then all of a sudden are responsible for your condition and that you are singled out, which means that you feel isolated, that is the perfect soil for shame to increase and to grow. So naturally, the individual will seek to elevate that feeling by adopting the ideas that it's biological, it's genetic, that it will explain why they have something. And what is the effect of that, or the result, I should say, instead of that? Well, that pharmaceuticals can sell more drugs, actually. And for sure, it does not increase our trust in ourselves and that we can get rid of these conditions or symptoms through some simple changes to our life. So I wanted to begin with this because many people would definitely shake their heads and raise their eyebrows and go, "Ooh," to the idea that Ayurveda could solve such a thing as ADHD. But if we would actually look at the symptoms of this condition and then look at what the entire purpose of Ayurveda and yoga, therefore, as well, is, we end up with the solution for the condition. The Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the famous ancient texts, stories really, epics that we find from the Vedic scriptures. We come into the story when Arjuna, the soldier, the warrior actually, I should say more, is conflicted with the idea of going to war against his own family. And Krishna helps him to see why this battle that he's going into the next day is necessary. It is his dharma, it is his purpose. And if you don't understand the analogy that the whole Hindu culture kind of bases itself on when it comes to a lot of these things, you take it literally and you might even think that the story would glorify war, but of course that's absolutely not the case. Because you start every day of your life by entering into a battlefield. The battlefield of taking the right or the wrong action. Knowing how to take the right action is actually what yoga is, according to the Bhagavad Gita. But we can only know that when the mind is steady, when it's clear and settled. Hence, yoga is the stilling of the mind. Yoga is meditation. Basically, we could say the principle of the Vedic philosophy is to arrive at the point where you see your true nature. It is, of course, the goal of the Buddha when he expresses that clinging to the living is the source of suffering. Because our true nature is not actually in the material world that we identify with. We identify with the material world, and since the material world is always changing, it goes from cosmos to chaos to cosmos to chaos, we suffer since we cling to the idea that it should stay the same. But let's not go into a class on philosophy here. It's just to understand that this is the whole reason for these practices. The practices of meditation, the practices of yoga at large, and the practice, really, of Ayurveda. To stand and see your true nature, that full potential that is complete and whole in itself. Already here, we're conflicted with this idea that ADHD, for instance, then would be a biological issue of imbalance of chemicals in your brain, as if you would be born, therefore, flawed. Coming back to then the idea that when you find your true nature, when you see clearly, when you remove the veil of ignorance, then you take right action, then you find freedom. Meditation is therefore done so that we clarify the mind, we remove the obstacles that makes us suffer. What were the symptoms of ADHD? The conflicted mind. Mainly there's three things, right? It's the short attention span, the incapacity to control impulses, and difficulties to be still or hyperactivity. So maybe these kind of difficulties existed already back in the days of the Buddha and his buddies. Since clearly that seems to be the suffering that they were talking about, that would therefore be pacified through certain practices. Let's start with just talking about children for a moment here. Since children, well, ADHD has increased more than doubled in children over the past 30 years. And I have already in the previous episode mentioned the fact that it might not be the most natural thing for children to sit still for hours on end, 8 hours or so, on a school bench, trying to learn things from a teacher that might not even be very skilled in transmitting information. But there's another concept that comes in here, and that is the idea of play. Because children play naturally, right? Organically they would play. And if you look at animals, this is what the babies of animals do. They learn through play. And so do we, actually. We learn through play. Actually, we cannot learn when we're not relaxed. We're not capable of taking in and storing information and memorizing things when we are not relaxed. Coming back to my patient, understanding why, number one, it might have been very challenging as a child to learn homeworks when there's a parent who is basically making us hyper-vigilant, so not at all relaxed. And then also in the same situations, trying to remember things that they had learned when they're not feeling comfortable. So we can't really learn, actually, when we are not relaxed. And when we play, we're very much relaxed because there's no productivity in there. There's no result coming from it. We learn through that, and our brain develops when we play. And when do we usually stop playing? Well, I'm not going to say that as soon as we start school, we stop playing, but let's be clear on the fact that if you sit in school for hours on end, and then, of course, you get homework that you need to do when you get home from school, it leaves, first of all, very little time to play, and you might not even feel inspired to. If we would talk about ADHD in adults, without even taking under consideration if it's something that they had as children but wasn't diagnosed, or if it could start in adult age, I think it's already enough to say that if we want to perform a task well, we need to be able to focus on it. But if we sit in an office, let's say, at work, where there are, I don't know, 5-6 emails coming in every hour, there's phones ringing, there's bosses asking for updates, it will decrease our productivity and therefore reduce our attention span. Add to that, now this is like what it's been like, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And then add to that smartphones that sure enough existed already back then, but just like imagine the spin that it's taken with the increase of social media. And the fact that all of a sudden then, even 15 years ago, or kind of 10 years ago at least, we then had to all of a sudden be available 24/7 due to the smartphones. There is this underlying vigilance of notifications that happens, which means you do not need to be growing up in a severely traumatized environment to develop hyper vigilance, right? Who has not experienced the ghost symptoms when we believe that the phone was buzzing in our pocket or hallucinating that there was a ping from WhatsApp? Especially if we're kind of like waiting for that maybe to happen. You just have to live in 2022 with primary needs for food, shelter, and belonging, and you become hyper-vigilant just by that. Every single day is truly Arjuna's battlefield in 2022. And the mind is an excellent slave, but a horrible master. So what is needed is to train it well for the role that we want it to have. And this means two things. We need to condition the mind for the habits we want it to have, since the brain is wired for patterns of recognition. It means that it's absolutely wired for addiction as well. But it's through the choices that you make every day that you choose what you want it to be addicted to. Now that is the battlefield between right and wrong action. Not because someone tells you what is the right or wrong action or right thing to do, but because you always seek to feel good. So when you choose to feel good, you better choose the feel good option that promotes health in your brain and in your body. Or, for sure, the internal war, you will feel it ever so strongly. How do we condition the mind for what we want it to feel like? By having the lifestyle that promotes health. The second thing that this means is that we need to learn how to manage our fear response. Now, why is that the case? Okay. There's biological, social, psychological, and environmental reasons that we need to learn how to manage our fear response. But we could answer that question with a simple thing of the acronym halt. You see, whatever good intentions you have, whatever great ideas and motivations we might hold on to, they are thrown out the window when a deeper instinct takes over. Let's call this the phenomena of 1st of January. I'm going to stop drinking, stop smoking, save more money, not shopping, go to the gym. And 2 weeks into January, there we are, out drinking again, right? Or whatever it might be. So the thing is, when our urges take over, our reason has nothing to say. This is actually why some neuropsychiatrists would even claim that there is no such thing as willpower. So the acronym HALT means hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When we are in either of these four states, we are no longer listening to reason. Our primary needs take over. The stress response takes over. I've spoken about stress before. And this is, of course, when we let old bad habits take over again. The bigger, better option. The easy go. And I've spoken about addiction as well before, so I don't even have to mention in habit formation how when we then fall back on old bad habits, not only does that make us feel even worse, it actually perpetuates the addiction to the bad habit. So by training our brain to not fall in the pit of stress, we're making ourselves capable of reading the signs coming from the organism of hungry, angry, lonely, tired, without having the stress response pushing us. Because what we do is that we're in our different stress management behaviors, we're conditioning the brain to not be so sensitive to stress factors. Which means that we can make the right choice when we are all of a sudden starving and see the golden arcs of fast food just in front of us. One last thing is diet. Have you heard about the fact that diet choices are apparently important in attention deficit? You might have, or you might not have, but I don't think that anyone will raise their eyebrows when I say that processed food containing refined sugar, refined white flour, saturated fats has been proven to actually make things worse. So dietary guidelines are essential when dealing with ADHD. What have I been saying here? I have been saying that there are three important factors when dealing with this condition of attention deficit and hypervigilance. And those are lifestyle choices, stress management, and diet. What is the principles of the Ayurvedic treatment based on? Lifestyle choices, stress management, and diet. Because what it does when we adopt these principles of Ayurveda is that, going back to the Vedas, going back to the ancient philosophy, it clears the mind, it stabilizes the mind, and it allows for us to see our true nature. It increases our capacity, bit by bit, to stay in that place that we are in, when we manage to see things clearly. Now, I see that I will need to continue the discussion in order to go more into details, to actually give you some of the tools. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that it's really difficult to just change everything, and especially if you are suffering from ADHD or if you have people in your life suffering from ADHD. But since this is actually a treatment, a remedy, and that means a cheap one, because there's not a lot of things you need to buy in order to do these things. And more so, there's no pill you need to take for the rest of your life. Then I am also there to guide you through it. Really, my 8-week program is for anyone with any kind of lifestyle difficulties, conditions, but very much so for people who have issues with attention deficit, since this is truly the base for the Ayurvedic and yogic practices. Thank you so much for choosing to listen to this podcast and this episode. I am very grateful. If you enjoyed this and you think that other people could enjoy this, please help me to spread the word. Share this episode on any channel that you have of social media or messaging. And even more so, I would really appreciate if you know one other person who might benefit from my words today specifically. Take that 1 minute it takes to simply share this episode with one person. Remember that there's a human being on the other side of your phone, of your earpods, of this microphone. And I would love to hear your thoughts on what I've been talking about. So please leave a comment. Send me a message directly if you wish. This is Charlotte. This is me. See you next time. Namaste.